This is Radio 2.
Captain Povey's office. Captain Povey speaking.
Ah, there you are now. Good boy. Just checking.
Oh, but Ramona, my love, where else would I be?
Gallivanting around with your new secretary.
Oh, good grief, my love. Surely you don't suspect that poor old Wren Barrett and I...
Poor old Wren Barrett, nothing. You left this morning. I followed you on my dear mother's bicycle. And I saw you greet Wren Barrett at the dockyard gate.
I never saw you. I mean, if I had, I'd have waved.
Hypocrite. You told me she was old and gray and waiting for her pension.
But she is, my love.
No, she is not, my love. She is what I would describe in modern parlance as a dolly budgie. Don't quibble. And watch it. This very morning, I just happened to be looking through the keyhole of my Ramona paid-for bathroom door, and I saw you putting a quick dab of me lavender water behind your ears.
Oh, that was an accident, my love.
Was it? Well, it's not going to happen again because I've marked the bottle. And one more thing. Don't attempt to leave your office to flaunt your sensual beefcake in front of that gal. Because from time to time, Henry, I shall be making sporadic spot checks.
Ladies and gentlemen, we present The Navy Lark, written by Laurie Wyman and George Evans, and starring Leslie Phillips, John Pertwee, and Stephen Urry.
Lieutenant Commander Murray, Sub-Lieutenant Phillips, and CTO Pertwee are here, as you requested, Captain Povey.
Good. Send them in, Wren Barrett.
Good morning, sir.
And good morning, sir, likewise.
I say, Samantha, before I get involved with this lot, what are you doing tonight?
Nothing, Leslie.
Oh, what a shame. Come to think of it, neither am I.
Well, couldn't we do nothing together?
I don't think that would be much fun. I mean, you'd be doing nothing here, and I'd be doing nothing somewhere else.
Mr. Phillips, you are the only man I've ever met who won't take yes for an answer.
Gosh, thanks.
Mr. Phillips, will you stop chatting up my secretary and come in at once? I'm a very busy man, and I've had something to say that's very important that affects you and your entire ship's company.
Well, I know nothing about it. I was nowhere near it at the time, and in any case, it'll be put back this afternoon.
Nothing like that. Nothing. Honorable, I mean the Sea Lord's godson, Horace, is due for some sea time to complete his training. No other ship is available, so Troutbridge has got him. And no.
Just checking. Good boy. Carry on.
May I ask, sir, who had this bright idea of lumbering us with the Sea Lord's nauseating little... charming godson? No. Just a minute, Captain Powers. But if I've got my factual straight, is it me, him and him, and the rest of us in Troutbridge, we're going to be stuck with an honourable little mini-Captain Bly, i.e. to wit, one nauseating sea cadet aboard Troutbridge?
Yes.
Permission to buy myself out for service, sir?
On the other hand, Samantha and I could do nothing together. On the third hand, that wouldn't be much fun either, would it?
Hey.
Hmm?
Bubble?
Exactly. I'll leave things as they are. Mm. Samantha and I will do nothing together in different places.
Frankly, Chief, if you had any hopes of promotion at any time in the future, I wouldn't go around calling the Sea Lord's godson, Sea Cadet Horace Wellington Gore, an honorable little Captain Bly. Would you?
No, sir.
Thank you, sir. Not at all, Chief. Just part of my after-sales service.
On the fourth hand, there's absolutely no chance of Samantha and I doing something together because we'll be in two different places doing nothing separately together.
Bubble? Leave him, Chief. He'll catch up with us eventually.
Excuse me, Captain Povey, but it's the Admiral...
Oh, do get out of my way, woman. I'm the Admiral, and people who get in my way get trodden on.
Good morning, Admiral. Would you like to...
No, I wouldn't, Povey. There isn't time. And don't interrupt when I'm talking. I'm the Admiral. Now, this little fellow with me here is the Sea Lord's godson, Horace. He hates the sea, prefers bingo, but he's going to sea with you lot anyway.
This load of twits will take some beating.
What was that? Horace?
I said I'm thrilled to bits to be at this meeting, sir. On the fifth hand... if I was with another chap and Wren Barrett was with another chapess, all going out doing nothing together, separately, and we happened to meet up in different places, all four of us would be doing nothing together, together. Which would be much more fun. Wouldn't it? Crikey. Blonde Bonce is in the queue for the funny farm.
What was that?
I said, Sir Crikey, once I sail with you, I'll come to no harm.
Oh, splendid.
That's not what I heard. I could be wrong, but I doubt it.
What was that?
What I said was, I'll go along with that, and I'm glad about it.
Creeping ideas. Everybody got cloth ears around here.
On the sixth hand... if the other chap and the other chapess let us down, we'd still be doing nothing.
Incidentally, Povey, what size shoes do you take?
8 1/2, then.
Good man. Broad or slim-fitting?
Broad, then.
Splendid. Leather soles, I hope?
Oh, yes, sir. I always have leather soles.
Very wise. I can't stand this composition plastic rubbish myself.
I agree, sir. It's so important to look after your feet. Commander Murray, sir, why are these two talking about that tootsie clobber?
Search me.
Lace-ups or casual slip-ons?
Oh, lace-ups, sir. After all, I am a member of the senior service.
Very right. Laces in good nick, aren't
they? Oh, yes, sir. Practically new. Excuse me, Commander Murray, but what are these two?
Don't ask me, Chief, but I'm sure Captain Povey's going to regret volunteering all this information about his boots.
Rubber heels or leather?
Always leather, sir. Except, of course, for the steel tips. Oh. But they don't make much noise as long as I'm on the carpet.
Yes, they'll do. Get them off.
Commander Murray, sir, have you any idea?
Not a clue.
On the seventh hand.
Oh, shut up! Get what off, sir?
Your tootsie clobber, of course. I need them. You can have my ghastly slippers.
Slippers? Excuse me, Your Admiralship. One hadn't noticed before, but one does raise an eyebrow to find an admiralship going to walk about some slippers. May one ask why, sir?
Because this admiralship didn't have a blasted choice. When Horrible Horace arrived last night, I had a wardrobe full of tootsie clobber. And this morning, when I went to put a pair of them on, they'd all gone absent without leave.
And what's on your eighth hand, Mr. Phillips, sir?
I'm glad you asked, Horrible Horace. I've been working on that. You see, if I made it a party of six as opposed to a party of four, and assuming that the four of us didn't turn up, that would leave Samantha and I doing nothing together in the same place. Yeah, No, there's a snag. Supposing the two people who did turn up weren't Samantha and I, because we already had previous engagements to do nothing somewhere else separately. But that means that we have forced two complete strangers that neither of us has ever even met to go to a party for six people, and we already know that the other two and Samantha and I aren't going. And we also know that the other two don't know each other, because the other four of us aren't there to introduce the two who are to each other. You're absolutely right, Horace. I shall scrub the whole idea. And not send the invitations out at all.
Oi, Povey, you bald-headed clown. How much did you pay for these appalling shoes? And if they were more than a fiver, you were done.
I got them for £3.25 at a sale.
You were still done. Both of my big toes have got fighting claustrophobia already. Oh, never mind. I'm stuck with your cheap shoes, and you're stuck with my ghastly slippers and Horrible Horace for the next week. Creeping ivy, me bunions aren't half throbbing. Boom, boom, boom. Oh,
poor. Oh, it's so nice to be with you chaps. You're such a nice bunch of fellows, and I'm so looking forward to the next 7 days.
And it'll be equally nice having you aboard with us, Horace. Aren't you, chaps?
Gosh, yes.
Gosh, no.
What was that, Chief?
I said from the word go, sir, from the word go.
Captain Purvis office, Captain Purvis speaking.
Still there. Good boy. Just checking.
Oh, Sea Cadet Wellington Gore. I'm glad you managed to locate the whereabouts of the ship's stores.
Leading Seaman Goldstein said there was a cardboard box I'd got to collect.
That's not all you've got to collect, my lad.
Really, Chief? What else have I got to collect?
An ear hole for a good advice.
Oh, spiffing. Any advice from you is welcome, Chief. After all, you know all about the sea. I mean, you're an old salt. All the crew I've spoken to in the last 3 days have nothing but the highest esteem for you. They look up to you, respect and admire you, and none more than able seaman Ginger.
Yeah, was that before or after a certain unknown sea cadet slung a dirty great tot of gin at his hangover medicine and started his headache all over again?
That was an accident, Chief.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. Like the moment when leading seaman Goldstein was about to chuck a bucket of galley slops over the side, and you persuaded him the wind was coming from the other direction, and he copped the lot.
But I did apologise.
You did indeed, lad. Same way you apologised to the chief engineer when you accidentally released the steam valve, and Sponge pressed his uniform whilst he was still wearing it.
Oh, that was a pity. Is the chief engineer all right?
No, but the MO says he'll be fit for duty in about 10 days.
Oh, I'm delighted to hear that. I did visit him in the sick quarters, you
know. Yes, I heard about that, too. The old ship's company heard about that. The only person who didn't hear about it was a sick berth attendant who happened to be on duty and became suddenly unconscious at the time. How his thermometer finally ended up where it did will, with luck, mercifully remain a mystery to us all.
Wasn't my fault, Chief.
Like all the other little accidents what occurred in your presence, there still remains an element of doubt that you were responsible. Not much, but a minuscule.
You can't prove anything, Chief. And if you want to keep walking and talking, I'd keep your great, long, beaky nose out of things that don't concern you.
See, Cadet Wellington Gore, I've only got one thing to say to you. If anything descends on Pertwee's bonds from a great height, or anything disappears from underneath Pertwee's feet, Pertwee's either going to belt you one, or Pertwee's going to come back and haunt you forever.
Oh, don't worry. It's not going to be anything as obvious as that. I've got something much better in mind for you. Chief, you must have heard of the expression, there are more ways of getting rid of a cat than dropping a 10-ton truck on its nut. So watch it. If one is speaking to Mrs. Pivy.
You have that honor. And while you're disguising your voice, Chief Petty Officer Pertwee, and if I may say so, failing miserably.
One is not admitted to defying anything. Just let one say this call comes from a well-wisher.
Right. Point taken. Chat on, well-wisher. What is the purpose of this telephonic communication?
One thought that one, i.e. me, ought to let one, e.g. you, know that one, for instance, Captain Povey, is doing very nicely, thank you, with one's, that is, his secretary, Wren Barrett.
What?
So one, that is me, suggests that someone, what is you, ought to sort it out a bit sharpish.
Now look here, well-wisher.
Captain Povey's office, Wren Barrett speaking.
Of course, turn the crows. May one inquire if one is speaking to Wren Barrett?
I just said so, Chief Petty Officer Pertwee, and why are you speaking in that high voice? You don't sound a bit like Sea Cadet Wellington Gore.
One is not admitted to defying anything about who one is or isn't. One is merely passing a message.
All right, Chief. I'll go along with your little game. What's the message?
It's about Sub-Lieutenant Phillips.
Leslie? Well, yes, go on. Does he want to change arrangements for this evening? I'm due to meet him outside the cinema at 7 o'clock.
One wouldn't waste one's time. Loverlips Leslie won't be there. He's got a better bird on the side who's bigger and bouncier than you are.
Well, of all of them, just wait until I...
Now, assuming that the sun is over the yardarm on both the port and starboard sides, and taking into account that I've got a viper in my bosom called Chief Petty Officer Pertwee... Oh, no, that can't be right. No, because I'm a sub-lieutenant and a chap. I haven't got a bosom. And also taking into account that the coastline is 16 miles away, and I'm supposed to have a bigger and bouncier bird than Wren Barrett, who I don't even know and have never met, I'd say what we need is a touch of the old left hand down a bit.
Left hand down a bit, Eddie, sir, and being lumbered with the job of coxswain, because a certain chief petty officer is not welcome up here on the bridge. With regard to the rest of the chat, I'm keeping my Welsh lubbles as firmly shut as a Clanball Gethley pub on a Sunday during chapel.
So, that's it then. It's over.
What is?
I am undone.
Oh. Drafty. Can I help you do it up again?
23 months, 1 week, 4 days, 2 hours, and 35 minutes of joy, ecstasy, and bliss of married life thrown on the manure heap of a divorce court. And all because of one man who, all these years, has hypocritically pretended to be a trusted shipmate and comrade, and who, because of the tradition of the senior service, shall remain nameless.
You mean Pertwee?
Exactly. I've never said it. How that swine could phone my wife, Rita Kins, I mean Mrs. Murray, and blatantly lie to her that I'm not interested in mucking out Bouncing Betty's stable and that I loathe and detest horses is beyond me. For my life, horses and mucking out stables are all that I live for. Next to Rita Kins, I mean Mrs. Murray, of course.
Steady, sir, steady.
I won't be steady. In fact, I'm determined to be completely unsteady. I even bought her a special anniversary present. A yard broom. Her size. And now, oh, wasted. Well, I'm warning everybody. If that craggy-faced monster in the CPO's uniform has the brass nerve to poke his great big conch round the bridge door, I shall beat him to a pulp with my bare hands. And I beg of you, don't interfere. Don't attempt to hold me back. In this mood, I'm an animal. I suggest you turn your backs, because I shall probably rip him apart.
Excuse me, Commander Murray.
Yes, Chief?
I was just wondering if there was anything I could do for you, sir.
No, Chief, you've got it all wrong. Commander Murray wants to do something for you. He was just saying, as soon as you put your great big conch round the bridge door, that he'll beat you to pulp with his bare hands.
Pardon? And we're under orders not to hold him back, because in this mood, he's an animal.
Pardon?
No, you've been reprieved. I'm only restrained from thrashing you to within an inch of your life and ripping you apart because in the nick of time I've remembered I'm an officer and a gentleman and hold the Queen's commission, so I can't. It's a pity, but there it is. It can't be helped.
Thank you very much, sir. Very much obliged, I'm sure.
Thank you, sir. No, pardon me. Come back.
Sir?
By my position, I may not be allowed to engage you in fisticuffs and show you up for the slang you are.
Every time you put your great big conch round that door...
No need to harp on about that, Mr. Phillips. As I was saying, if it's not going to be jackets off and pistols or bare fists at dawn, at least you could give me a well-worded and abject apology.
And that goes for me, too.
Certainly, James, but... What the hell for?
You know perfectly well what for, troublemaker. Spreading malicious gossip, you unmitigated swine.
Take my tip, Chief. Grovel now, because if you don't, after Commander Murray has finished with you, you'll have me to deal with. So it will end with conkers at dawn. And I should warn you that I have a 69er.
Excuse me, sir, I don't want to interrupt your little fracas, but my last order was left hand down a bit, 20 minutes ago. And as a result, we've been going round in slowly decreasing circles. And I've no wish to disappear up our own propeller shaft.
Hmm.
a minute. You can't burst in here like this. I don't even know who you... Oh, yes, I do. You're the elderly lady in the photograph on Captain Povey's desk, in that terrible hat.
For your information, it was a very good hat. It belonged to my dear mother. She bought it in 1927 from Bon Marché for 5 11/3. Now then, so you are the slut who is trying to take my man out of my life.
Do what? You can't possibly be the bigger and bouncier bird that Leslie fancies.
Leslie? I don't give a fig about your Leslies. I am referring to Henry, the man who has the honor to be my husband.
Henry? Are you sure you're in the right office, madam?
I am not a madam. I am Mrs. Ramona Povey.
Oh, I see. You're bald, Isolde. I mean, you're Captain Povey's wife.
Will you get your priorities right? He is my husband. And what is more, I'm not standing for a fly-by-night flippity-gibbet like you, bringing on his hot flushes and making him think mucky thoughts.
Him and me? That's got to be a joke.
Henry is no joke to me. He may not be much, but he is mine.
I didn't mean it like that, Mrs. Povey. Your husband is a very fine, handsome, and distinguished-looking man.
Hmm, that's better.
I mean, there is a considerable difference in our ages. And in any case, my interests lie with Sub-Lieutenant Phillips of Troutbridge.
Oh, that blonde idiot. Now look, there's something fishy going on here. I received a message on my Ramona paid-for telephone from CPO Pertwee in an ill-disguised voice, proclaiming that you and my Henry were having a bit of slam tickle.
This is beginning to make sense. I also had a phone call from Pertwee in a badly disguised voice saying that Leslie was two-timing me.
I see. Well, we all know what CPO Pertwee is now, don't we?
An unmitigated swine.
Look, come on in, Murray. Mr. Phillips. How many times does Pertwee have to apologise when Pertwee don't have nothing to apologise for in the first place?
You iniquitous swine.
You unmitigated swine. Will you stop calling me assorted swine?
Rotten swine. Filthy swine.
W.T. Room?
Kwana Murray here. Get me that ship to shore call to Rita Kibbs. I mean Mrs. Murray, straight away.
Sorry, sir, I can't do that. The line's still engaged.
It's been engaged for the last half hour. Oh, very well. I'll try again in a minute. I must speak to Rita and apologize and clear things up to tell her that it was Pertwee who told her a complete pack of lies.
Unspeakable swine.
Despicable swine.
Think yourself lucky that Commander Murray managed to contain himself in his animal-like mood and didn't rip you to bits and beat you to pulp with his bare hands.
It wasn't easy. But Pertwee didn't do nothing to nobody. Pertwee don't carry round pockets full of two-peas to make pernicious phone calls to the people.
Swine.
W.T. Room.
It's Commander Murray again.
Sorry, sir, the line's still engaged.
Oh, very well, I'll try again later. Believe me, gents all assembled. Pertwee didn't ring Mrs. Murray and tell her you were fed up mucking up bouncing Betty's stable. Pertwee didn't phone up Wren Barrett to tell her Mr. Phillips fancied a bigger, better and bouncier bird. Pertwee didn't ring up Mrs. Povey and tell her old Thunderguts was chancing his arm with his secretary. I'm innocent, I tell you. Innocent. You do believe me, don't you?
Sneaky swine.
Unforgivable swine.
W.T. Room.
Commander Murray here. Get me that call to my wife, will you?
Sorry, sir. Form's still engaged.
Oh, very well. I'll try later. Who the blazes is on the phone all the time?
Excuse me, Commander Murray, sir.
But you could find out, you know. Just pump up that call on the loudspeaker so we can all hear it.
Oh, certainly not. Phone conversations are private. How would you like to be bugged? Pardon?
Well, oh, I have been, sir. Yeah. Good and proper. And I reckon I know who by.
Well, I'm a fair man, much as I hate doing this.
W.T. Room.
Punch that call up through the bridge loudspeaker, will you? I want to hear what's going on.
Very well, sir.
And, of course, you will understand that one don't not wish to disclose one's identity, as one wishes to remain anonymous.
It's him! It's Honorable Norris! The swine!
The unmitigated swine.
But one's already had a bit of a chat with a certain naval gent at Buck House who was most grateful for one's tip-off.
Permission to go below, sir, and tan the living daylights out of a certain someone what we don't not need to mention.
Carry on, Chief.
The swine.
The unmitigated swine.
But keep the speaker switched on, sir. I want to hear this.
And furthermore, in passing, Captain Povey's wife, Ramona, is not averse to having a bit on the...
Culture! Come here!
Pop it out!
You know what you are, Honorable Ollis. You are a disgusting, handsome, nauseating, mutt-raking, abominable, repellent, loud-mouthed little squirt.
Best radio program I've heard for years.
Quiet, sir, quiet. I don't want to miss a single slap.
I'll tell my mom!
You've never had one. You disgusting, lonesome, despicable, oily,
Leslie Phillips, John Pertwee, and Stephen Murray have been confounding the ungodly in The Navy Lark, written by Laurie Wyman and George Evans. Leslie Phillips was the sub-lieutenant, John Pertwee was the chief petty officer, Stephen Murray was the CO, Richard Caldicott was Captain Povey, Heather Chasen was Ramona Povey.
Captain Povey's office?
Still there, good boy. Just checking, carry on.
Thank you. Daniel Evans was Admiral von Bittux, Michael Bates was Horace, April Walker was Wren Barrett. The announcer was Don Debridge. The show was produced by Alastair Scott Johnston.